I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information, especially this week when we are declaring this the middle of 2019, and we're going to start our review of the movies of 2019 so far.
Really? And we're going to do that?
Yes.
Can we invite some other people to join us?
We need some experts. We need to get our film expert, Kyle Hickman, on the line. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy to be here.
How many movies have you seen so far in 2019?
81.
My God.
Steve, so we've got our American perspective. Do we have another person we can invite?
We do, in fact. Stacey Shaw, the horror film maven, is also here from England. Good morning, Stacey.
Hi, guys.
Good morning. Welcome in. This is your first time actually being on the show and being a part of a live version of Too Much Scrolling.
It is. No pressure.
No pressure at all. No technological difficulties whatsoever.
All right, so Steve, definitely what you need to not. Do is we want you to lay down the ground rules so we can get started.
Okay, so here's how we're going to play this game. We are going to do fantasy draft style. Everybody gets one movie.
Do we have to dress up, Steve, yes. If it's fantasy?
Yes, it's not that kind of fantasy. I'm sorry to disappoint you, Chip. Okay. Sorry, not this weekend. We're going to choose one movie as your favorite movie, and once your movie has been chosen, nobody else gets to choose that movie. So if, for instance, Kyle chooses Midsommar as his favorite movie so far, then nobody else gets to choose that. We can discuss it a little bit amongst ourselves, and we can agree or disagree with the choices, but once they're off the board, they're off the board. So we're going to get through a few rounds of this and see what our favorite movies of 2019 have been so far. I said Kyle because, yes, Kyle, as the film expert, you get to go first. What is your
Kyle is
favorite?
On the clock, Steve.
I'm on the clock. That means I had
your
a really
favorite movie of 2019.
It means I had a really bad 2018 if I get first pick, so I'll take it. My number one film of the year is The Farewell.
Wow.
Yes, featuring Awkwafina, who is normally a comedian. Mm-hmm. You know, comedian actor. So her playing
and
a very
rapper.
Serious role. Exactly. Exactly. So this kind of showcased her as the full package as an artist. It's a drama about a Chinese family who their matriarch is diagnosed with terminal cancer. And it shows the cultural differences between what an American family would do in that circumstances versus what a Chinese family would do. So a lot of cross-cultural comparison, very emotional film, and some really good performances. And so that would be my top film of the year, and I think a lot of critics out there would agree.
There's a lot of dust in the air when I watched this. I had a hard time focusing on the screen because of all that. I really wish they would have cleaned out the theater a little better, because I had a hard time watching it with all the tears coming down my face.
And Stacey, you haven't seen that one yet because it hasn't come to England yet, right?
No, it hasn't. We've just got the trailers though, and they're looking really good.
All right.
I will agree with Kyle. So there's two votes for this one, because this one really did give it a sharp contrast. If we talked a little bit about sort of the United States or the West and how we deal with death and how we work as individuals on working with death, it's very different than how the Chinese as a culture choose to deal with, you know, a terminal situation like this. I think this is an eye-opening way of how just a different culture looks at things.
And there are two examples of how good of a movie this is. I'm in the theater, I'm watching the screen, and there's a point, and Chip will know when this happens, they take a group photo after a wedding, and they all are essentially forcing smiles. And I found myself literally forcing the same smile staring at the screen. And I snapped myself back and I went, Kyle, what are you doing? That's how well the director has pulled you into the film, right? I had two instances very similar to that. I clapped as well at one point in time when everyone was clapping. I was like, Kyle, what are you doing?
You were a part of the adventure of this story. That's amazing.
It's wild.
That's great when a movie can do that for you. Stacey, what is your favorite movie of 2019 so far?
Ooh, so far. it might be cheating slightly because it did have a preview in 2018, but I'd say it's One Cut of the Dead.
Wow, you're going to call that your favorite movie of 2019 so far, One Cut of the Dead. Tell us all about this one.
Well, essentially, this is a Japanese horror film that's about some guys trying to make a zombie film. And it's a film within a film. It goes a bit meta, and it's just this insane thing where all the things that you don't expect to happen on a movie set happen. And you're watching this guy trying to figure out how to make it work whilst he's got this drunk guy who's meant to be a zombie who's falling over. And he's just struggling throughout the whole thing. And it's very, very funny. And it seems very relatable to normal filmmaking in a weird way.
So this is a very meta horror comedy, right?
Oh, yes. You spend most of it laughing out loud. There were people coming out with tears in their eyes when I saw it.
Wow.
It's just so hilarious.
Two tear-filled movie so far. The Farewell, people were crying because it was a dusty theater. and then this one, so funny that you're crying coming out of One Cut of the Dead.
Oh, yeah. My face hurt from laughing the next day still. That's how much I laughed.
That's great.
Well, I look forward to seeing this then.
We will put this on our list. That is for certain.
So, I'm going to let Steve go first, and I'll take last because Steve is our magic person here.
Okay, because you know that I've only seen 12 movies. So if we do three rounds, I only have a list of 12 movies. So I'm going to declare my favorite movie of 2019 so far, Spider-Man Far From Home. This is a great action-adventure Spider-Man movie wrapped in with a great European vacation, high school students going on vacation and being those characters. I recognize every single one of those kids. I know those people, and I definitely recognize those teachers that are on this vacation. It goes so well putting together those two parts where this is a good Spider-Man movie and a good European vacation movie.
So I'm going to show you how strong this film is, because I recommended to my senior in high school daughter to see this film. She does not like superhero films.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves Tom Holland.
Uh-huh.
And she loved this film, too.
My senior also enjoyed this film very much. He walked back in the house with just a look on his face like, wow.
This is a teen comedy.
This is a great movie putting uh-huh. together all of those parts. Do you agree, Kyle?
I do. I would say Jake Gyllenhaal was a really good cast.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
As Mysterio. Early on in the movie, you might be wondering if he was cast well, but then when you get into the background and the story of Mysterio, I think they did a really good job. And
so well put together.
As a Marvel nerd, I think this film does a really good job segueing between Phase 3 and Phase 4 and opening up some really interesting storylines for Peter Parker going into his next film, which I imagine will be 2021, whenever Sony decides to announce it.
Yeah.
Which I don't think a lot of people saw coming.
And I like Marisa Tomei as Aunt May.
Oh, beautiful.
Why not?
I mean, the youngest, most interesting Aunt May ever, I think.
And they made a great, she makes a great Aunt May to Peter Parker in the sense of how they can work together.
Mm-hmm. Stacey, did you see Spider-Man Far From Home?
I did several times. I loved it. It was so good.
It is the only movie on my list that I've seen twice. I've gone to the movie theater two times to see this movie because I liked it that much.
Wow. Yeah. So, Stacey, you have anything you want to add to this as a person who is, I mean, Spider-Man obviously takes place usually in New York City, but this takes place in
because you're still European for now, right?
I'm hoping it'll be permanently, but we'll see. We will see.
Well, at least for the time being, right?
Yeah. I thought it was nice to actually see them in settings that I visited myself. So that felt quite jaunting, especially when they're in Prague and they're in Old Wenceslas Square and all of that stuff is going down with the Ferris wheel. And it's just like, Spider-Man's kind of where I am, which is something we don't generally see as, you know, Brits and Europeans. He's always in America.
That's awesome. That is a great moment. You know, Kyle's got his moment with the movie where he was feeling emotionally connected to the scene, and you've got that geographic feeling, like, I know that place. I've been there. Like when I watch Batman and I go, oh, that's Lower Wacker Drive.
That's in Chicago.
That's a Chicago reference.
Not in Chicago.
Yep. Chicago. Right over my head.
All right, Chip, since you let me go first, you have to tell me what is your favorite movie that we haven't chosen yet for 2019.
I'm going comedy, Steve. I'm going with Booksmart.
Booksmart.
That's a good one.
Wow.
And this movie is still in the theaters which means it was so overlooked when it first came out back in May. And I happened to see it because, of course, the Barcelona scene just makes me laugh every time I see it. It is a very smart comedy that certainly is all these kids that we kind of know about.
Mm-hmm.
And Olivia Wilde just did, she was our director, did just a fabulous job at getting a true comedy out in a very, I would say, very Hollywood American version of a comedy too.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it is all those tropes, a little raunchy, but not too raunchy.
Right.
A little squeamish. Our two leads, the way they play off each other and make their parents just so accepting, but at the same time, don't tell us too much.
Right.
I mean, it just seems very, very modern. I said very Gen X, written as Gen Z.
Right. Kyle, you agree on Booksmart?
I do. It's a great film. Unfortunately, I don't think a ton of people saw it. The release, I think, was, it just didn't get as much fanfare as it should have, which is a shame because it's a great film. But the scene I will always remember from this is Jason Sudeikis as the Lyft driver. That whole scene, it's one of the best scenes of the year from a comedy standpoint. It's unbelievable. Speaking
as a teacher who spends his summer driving for Lyft, yes, I enjoy that scene very much.
It's so funny. It's so awkward. And it's just like, well, he's a real person and he's driving us. And that just came on to the aux cord. Good.
Stacey, did you see Booksmart?
I did. I loved it. It was only out here for 2 weeks, but it was the film that I would have wanted as a teenager. Uh-huh. There was nothing like that for us.
Yeah, I think Chip nailed it when he said this is Gen X writing for Gen Z. This is definitely that movie that we can appreciate from our perspective and our kids could appreciate from their perspective and come at it and hit in the middle.
Well, this certainly was very overlooked. And I think that was cast so well. And, mm-hmm. and maybe it's because, I don't know if my children, I'm sorry, my teenagers saw this film. They didn't see it. But I think there's no doubt that there's enough squeamish and laugh out loud scenes. I mean, mm-hmm. when I saw it on a preview and people were cackling in the audience. So anyway, I truly recommend this film.
There you go. Everybody should find a way to see Booksmart. It's going to be a challenge, but you should find that one. Seek it out. Kyle, what is your second favorite movie of 2019 so far?
Second round, baby. Let's go. I'm tempted to go down the continued Marvel route, but I have a feeling that one of you all might hit that one. So I'm gonna let you have that one. I'm gonna go to my next one, and that's Under the Silver Lake.
I am not familiar with this one, so tell us all about Under the Silver Lake.
So Under the Silver Lake is kind of a contentious pick. It's a very much you either love it or you don't understand it type of film. And so it's about this young man played by Andrew Garfield who lives in LA in Hollywood, is disheveled, doesn't really have his act together, is trying to make it. You're not really clear what exactly he does, but he works in the film industry. And one night he has an experience with this girl that lives near him in his apartment complex, hangs out with her like 3 or 4 hours. And the next morning she disappears. Her apartment's gone. And then he spends the rest of the movie basically trying to track her down. And so the movie is filled with all these conspiracy theories. It's a wacky, there's the homeless king. There's all this stuff that's going on. And if people don't get beyond what's the plot and don't get into the themes, I think that's when they get lost. Because the themes are all about, one, like masculinity and entitlement. Like this guy has 3 hours with this beautiful girl and he thinks he's entitled to spend more time with her. And so the film kind of takes you down that route. And it's very much a hipster noir film with a touch of Mulholland Drive, if you've ever seen that film.
Yeah. Being as much of a David Lynch fan as I am, yeah, Mulholland Drive is something that really messes with your head. Is this one of those?
Very, very similar. It's a lot of ode to old Hollywood, very similar to kind of what Tarantino would do, but it is so genius in the way it's built. And unfortunately, when it first appeared at BRIF in June 2018, and it was supposed to come out in theaters towards the end of 2018 and never did because of its lukewarm appearance at the film festivals. And so it finally came to like DVD, and I saw it through Redbox because it was one of those things that the trailer came out. I was like, hey, I'm really excited for this. And it just never came. And so,
interesting.
But as it's hit, people are starting to appreciate it because it's such a genius film about this entitlement of these like semi-talented, like Caucasian men in Hollywood and how little they have to work versus people of color, women who are talented and have all this work who have to bust their butts. And kind of the dangers of masculinity and feeling entitled to flesh or whatever it happens to be. So super fascinating film. And I don't think enough people have seen it.
Well, I look forward to seeing this. I remember the trailer, but it kind of fell under, you know, all the other movies that came out, and I didn't get a chance to see it. So now I'm gonna have to seek this one.
Stacey, did you see Under the Silver Lake?
I did. Yeah, I made a special trip into London because they were only showing it at one cinema, and it was well worth the journey because if you do get what's going on under the surface, it's a really interesting film. But there were quite a few people perplexed there that I don't think quite saw what was going on.
Perspective. A little bit of perspective goes a long way. I think that might be a theme for 2019, huh? So far. Stacey, what's your round two, your second favorite movie of 2019 so far?
Oh, second favorite's going to have to be, I think, Greta.
Oh, really? That is a very controversial pick.
Yes, it is.
Go on. Why do you love it?
Well, it's essentially taking that traditional horror trope of the evil old woman, but it turns it into something much more interesting because you can't figure out why she's doing this. Mm-hmm. And one of the most fun parts of it was the fact that there are so few men in it, but you don't notice it because you've got these really well-written characters that are genuinely scaring you, that you forget that, oh, wait, for once, there isn't a single male who's a lead. It was just refreshing, to be honest, just to see that, because honestly, other than the cop that comes in, you see very few men. It's all very focused in on Greta and her victims, as it were.
Kyle, do you agree that Greta was one of your favorites of 2019?
Not really. But and I'll tell you, I appreciate hearing it because I love hearing people's perspectives on films that I may not have loved as much. I think what I struggled with most with Greta was it reminded me so much of films like Scream, where the protagonist does the exact opposite of what they should do every single time. And Chloe Grace Moretz's character kept doing those things, like everything you shouldn't do in those circumstances. It just, like, I almost screamed at the TV. I'm like, what are you doing? So, like, the film got me really engaged, but from a hate-anger standpoint as to why it was going the way it was. I agree, it was a very unique take on the genre, and I was very intrigued. The third act let me down because I was like, this seems too stereotypical horror film-wise. I'm sorry.
It's all right. We can't all like the same things, can we?
This is true.
That's right. That's what I said. It was going to be a very controversial pick because there are certainly a divided audience on Greta. I've heard lots of people who love it and lots of people who really didn't enjoy that one.
All right, Steve, you're up. This is the magic moment for
all
you.
Right. Round two, my second favorite movie of 2019 so far has to be absolutely Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel is a love letter to the 1980s. It's got a Blockbuster Video in it. It is a female superhero who is so superior to everybody else, but does not act like it. She's certainly a down-to-earth, real human character with these fantastic powers. I love the characters in Captain Marvel again. I love the idea of the very young Samuel Jackson, the very young people in this pretending to be, you know, 30 years ago or 35 years ago, and seeing that 1980s setting. I love this movie.
Is this the part where we say Tom Cruise liked it so much he's going to remake Top Gun?
Yeah, this was the precipice on which he was standing going, I don't know if I should make Top Gun again. Oh, wait, they made a Top Gun movie and made him a superhero. I can do that.
Exactly.
There was definitely that Top Gun wonderful flying part to it, but none of the volleyball scene, thankfully.
And of course, it sets up the... ultimately, that the Earth may be the battleground for the Krees and the Skrulls, the two races that may be going to war later on.
Uh-huh. Ooh, segues.
Did the rest of you agree with me? Is this a good movie?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I liked it. I've defended it on your podcast before because I think There are some underlying problems that some viewers have with female superheroes that don't necessarily align with their expectations of what a female superhero should be. Just to kind of beat around the bush on that one. So I thought it was a pretty good film. And to your point, I think it gives some good odes to the 80s. And who doesn't love when a movie, or in the 90s, when a movie starts with her falling into a blockbuster? I mean, that's immediate nostalgia, right?
Yeah, I loved it. All right, Chip, what is your second round favorite movie of 2019 so far?
All right, this is where the dividing line is pretty deep. The movie I enjoyed most was The Extraordinary Journey of the Fakir. And this is a movie that is very light. It takes place, I think it's maybe a British film that, as far as the director of this, but it's about a gentleman who is from India and takes a journey to Paris, thinks he visits an IKEA, of course, feels like he's fallen in love with someone, and then goes on this journey. And it ends with this beautiful part where they ask if this is a true story. And he said, only the important parts. So there is like a little bow. This is a very light film. It's a joyful film. And I think what I enjoyed most from it was there was nothing raunchy in it. It truly is a very sincere film. And it was just what you think going to the films was like maybe a long time ago. You go for this joyful journey and then you leave and you smile and that's it.
And you said there was a lot of humor to this and lots of fun being had. You compared it to Big Fish and Forrest Gump, somewhere in between those films.
Well, yeah, I would say Big Fish, Forrest Gump, very similar to that. You're going on this journey. You know, what part's true, what part's not true. And it's just a guy telling a story, and ultimately it's a tall tale.
There you go. Kyle, have you seen this one?
I have not, but I'm adding it to my list.
There you go. Stacey, did you get a chance to see this one?
I haven't, no, but it sounds kind of Wes Anderson-y, so I think I need to watch it.
It does. It does kind of sound like
when we say that, I don't want to... it's not a weird film. There's nothing weird about it. Okay. It's pretty straightforward. And it's very light, but not any, say, Yesterday was, you know, a story that would be different, but similar enough to it. Okay. That, you know, it's a very light film. It ends in a bow and everybody smiles. It goes home. There's nothing really dark about it. Although, you know, the guy keeps running into cows everywhere, obviously. And and it's very humorous. And there's always something that's very funny. And like I said, that his immediate thought when he gets to this guy from India to go to IKEA, of course. And
that's where his
journey begins.
Yeah, that's right. Kyle, what is your round three third favorite film of 2019?
Another A24 production, which you can tell I'm slightly obsessed with them.
Okay, can we hold on and say A24 is putting out some amazing stuff the last like 3-4 years now.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I did a Twitter thread yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever it was, where, I mean, 30 to 40 really, really good films over the past about five or six years.
So many. Mm-hmm. So what is your third pick?
The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Have you guys seen it?
We've been waiting to see this, and this is one that dropped out of the theater too quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, limited release, for sure. A review I read about it, and I think it encapsulates it so well, is it's cinematic poetry. The cinematography is gorgeous. It's a slower film. It's very much a slower film. But it follows these two men who, basically, the one character's grandfather built this house in San Francisco in the 1940s. And over time, his family lost the property because of gentrification. Things got too expensive. Their family couldn't afford it anymore. And it's about him still clinging to this. Some of it is through lore. Some of it is stuff he believes but isn't actually true. And it's this really powerful discussion around gentrification, about the concept of what is a home. And obviously, he's not the last black man in San Francisco, but that's the theme that the film's trying to go with, right? Is places like San Francisco, much like many other big cities across the country and across the world, to where folks that used to call that place home aren't able to anymore because of the financial issues that are going on in the city. So it's very similar to Blindspotting, which was one of my favorite films from 2018. It's got that poetic crescendo to it in the same way, but it was very memorable. Highly recommend it if you get a chance to see it. It sounds like limited release, it makes it more difficult, but maybe it'll hit Redbox. I'm not sure.
That's why we make these lists. Right. Stacey, did you get a chance to see that one?
I hadn't even heard of it before now, but it's definitely going on my watch list.
There you go. That's what we're here for. What is your third favorite movie of 2019 so far, Stacey?
Right, third favorite. I'm actually going to go away from horror, shockingly.
Really? I am shocked.
I know. It's not the only thing I'm obsessed with, surprisingly. But I think my third one's going to be Toy Story 4.
Oh,
really?
There's a horror film in there.
There's some scary stuff in there.
There are. There's the creepy puppets, because those are just nightmare fuel, definitely. But yeah, I absolutely love that film. I mean, Toy Story has been going on since I was a kid anyway, so there's a nostalgia factor, but it seems to have just grown as it's got older, and it still knows that there are people who are watching who saw the first one in the cinema. And it seems to be that it has a story for adults as well as for kids. I mean, Forky, just honestly, the amount of times I felt like climbing into something and hiding like he does. He's very relatable. I don't know if it's a millennial thing or what, but he is extremely relatable.
You know, it's such a great reminder that growth sometimes means change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And change can be painful. And I think Pixar just does a beautiful job at telling stories that should be relatable, that you can relate to any age or any type of person. Truly an all ages type of story.
And what's fascinating about that film is that I think most of us after Toy Story 3, we're like, okay, we're content. I don't know if a lot of people wanted a fourth one. I think people were skeptical about a fourth one, but
I think we were just as skeptical after the second Toy Story. I think we felt that skepticism after number two, but number three was absolutely wonderful. And I'm glad to hear that number four has lived up to that expectation as well.
Well, especially after the end of Toy Story 3, which is very visceral and traumatic in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So Toy Story 4, I think, did a really good job of kind of capping Woody's story arc in a really, really cool way. Because I think his story arc in film is one of the more fascinating ones out there.
I agree. That's wonderful.
All right, Steve. Bring it up, baby. Bring number three.
All right. So I still have two superhero movies to choose from here. And I'm surprised that both of them are still on the board. And I have to decide whether I'm going to go with the highest grossing movie of all time here. Or if I'm going to go with the more humorous, more family-oriented, really good story with great characters. I'm going to go with Shazam here. I think Shazam is a really great movie.
Gomer Pyle agrees, Steve.
About family, about finding your tribe. Yeah, Avengers Endgame is a huge, spectacular billion-dollar movie, several billion-dollar movie, more money than any movie has ever made, including Avatar. You're welcome. But Shazam is something special. It's that DC universe, but it's certainly that family-oriented, we are going to get through this together story that is just so touching to me.
That part where, I think it's Freddie Freeman says, you know, it gets real Game of Thrones here.
Yeah.
Really, really fast. It really does.
All right, Kyle, you're really frustrated by my choice here.
No, I'm not. I was, you know, we'll see if Chip goes that route. I like Shazam. I think Shazam is a great film. Avengers Endgame is probably my number two. Because I think just capping 23 movies, three phases is unbelievable. But Shazam, I think, opened up and gave people hope for DC that they weren't having before. Because obviously we always compare the two, and Marvel's just been destroying DC in a lot of ways. For a universe that's usually kind of dark, right? And as Ryan Reynolds has pointed out as Deadpool, that DC is pretty dark. Shazam was a fresh breath of air, I think, in a lot of ways. And I think there's already been announced there'll be at least one sequel. So.
I look forward to it. I think Zach Levi is a great superhero, a great super agent, and I really love watching him.
I do think that the seven sins that he ultimately fought were much darker than they needed to be. I felt that they should have been much more...
Ghostbusters.
Yeah. A little bit lighter.
I don't disagree with you on that. Stacey, did you like Shazam?
I did. I thought it was a very sweet film, and coming in an age where so many people are in care or they're creating their own family, it was kind of nice to see that played out.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that there's so many stories out there. You know, we have stories of loss of family in all sorts of different, you know, Disney, my goodness, Disney loves killing mothers. They kill mothers in almost every story, but here's a story of a kid who's finding family, finding his place. And I really think that that's important.
Yeah, I learned a lot of that from Vin Diesel and The Rock. But, but baby. Thank goodness there was another story.
It's about family. Chip, what is your third round favorite movie of 2019 so far?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and go Tarantino on us. We're going to go Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Really?
Yes. Because, you know, this Halloween's coming up and I get to decide, who do I dress as? Brad Pitt? Or am I Leonardo DiCaprio? I mean, I go back and forth. I don't know which one I'll dress as this year.
I'm dressing as Charles Manson over here. I don't know about you guys. But...
Oh, my goodness. So tell me why this is your third favorite this year.
I don't necessarily think this was a great film for all time. But I do think this is a great film to study film. And study how Tarantino uses the craft of filmmaking. There is a story there. In fact, as we were kind of preparing for this, what I want to say is that Kyle had some points I hope he'll make right now. But this film uses the color, uses Hollywood, uses the era really, really well. And Tarantino kind of places all this together. Definitely, you're always fascinated by what's going on. And as always with a Tarantino film, there's something gross there that you can always refer back to.
Kyle, what's your feeling on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
I liked it. I would put it in my top 10, but I would say to Chip's point, Tarantino's always been obsessed with kind of old Hollywood and constantly makes references to it. And is also obsessed with the idea of spaghetti westerns. And in this film, the entire theme is about old Hollywood versus new Hollywood. Brad Pitt and Leo DiCaprio's characters representing old Hollywood and kind of the shifting of the wind to this new era. And there's one scene in there where he's sitting there with an 8-year-old girl who is a full-time actor, who is clearly on top of her game, doing basically she makes a joke about being like a Daniel Day-Lewis character actor, right? Like, don't refer to me by my real name, call me by my stage name. Because I feel I give better performances when that happens. And he's very much a drunk. And, you know, this guy was barely hanging on. And so from that standpoint, I thought Tarantino did a really beautiful job making sure his themes were pretty evident to the viewer of the film.
Stacey, have you seen this one?
It doesn't come out here until the 14th. Wow. It's been killing me. I was so excited. Oh, I searched the cinemas and thought, wait, why isn't it on? Oh, we get it 2 weeks later. Great.
Wow. Now you know how I feel when Doctor Who comes out 2 weeks late.
Oh.
Karma.
All right. Hopefully you'll love it just as much as these guys did. Kyle, do you have a fourth one? Should we go through a fourth round? What's your fourth favorite?
Controversial. I think a lot of people think Avengers Endgame is the death of film as an art form as we know it. You know, a lot of the critic snob folks out there would say, you know, the general trope is that superhero movies aren't good, which I think is false in a lot of ways. Just what they were able to do, 23 films, 3 phases, bring all of these 25 story arcs together, giving every – we talked about this on this podcast. The time, the screen time you have to give to each one of those stories – is so critical, and to make sure it transitions well is a challenge in itself. And when you look at people are campaigning for Tony Stark, for Robert Downey Jr. to maybe get an Oscar for best actor. And could you normally say that about a Marvel film? Not really. So it's an epic, right? And I don't think we'll see anything like this, at least for another 5 or 6 years, when Feige and company give us phases 4 through 6 and give us the next big bag, because I'm sure we'll get something very similar to that 5 or 6 years from now. But in terms of just overall magnitude, Avengers Endgame is just so impressive.
So Stanley and Jack Kirby created the Marvel Universe back in the 60s. And Jack Kirby always said that these would make great films. Mm-hmm. And this is, I mean, ultimately, Stanley left the Marvel publishing site to go to Hollywood to sell this as something that could be filmed. It took all these years in an independent film in Iron Man to bring it to the public on this level. Mm-hmm. Robert Downey Jr. is the face of that. I mean, mm-hmm. he is the charismatic character, actor that basically allowed the springboard for 23 films. Mm-hmm. And I think you're absolutely right, Kyle. I think that there's a good chance Robert Downey Jr., who is as important as Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, are to bringing the Marvel stories to the public. I think that there's a good chance that he may end up either stealing it or just taking it with him, because he was very powerful in this scene. There's a lot of weight in this story.
Yeah.
He's probably got a decent chance, because I think overall, when you look at best actor and best actress, best actress, we've seen some amazing performances, and I don't think on the best actor side, it's been as prominent. So I think he has a better chance than if he was on the other side of the aisle.
Stacey, what do you think of Avengers Endgame?
Well, I completely loved it. I took a day off to see it, so I was expecting big things. That's how far my love goes.
Certainly high.
Oh yeah, and they weren't disappointed.
Yeah, expectations were really high, and I did not walk away disappointed. Yeah. There was certainly a scope to this that was just beyond any movie that we've ever seen before. The 20 years that it took to get to this point, and it knocked it out of the park.
And it has one of the best scenes in film that you'll see for a long time, when that battle scene, when they all come out of the portals. I mean, for every fan in the theater, it's just like, oh my God, like this is happening.
Time. The amount of time that we spend on each of those faces in that scene is just perfect. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Stacey, do you have a fourth favorite for 2019 so far?
Fourth favorite? I think I'll go with Velvet Buzzsaw from Netflix. Which, to be fair, I never expected that I would go for, but it grew on me after a second viewing. I mean, it's not a perfect film. I'm not going to claim it is. But it's fun with what it does. It's got a neat story, interesting characters, and I really like the Giallo references through it all. Where you've got the paint coming down the walls and whatnot. So it's a bit niche, but it's very mainstream at the same time. So it
Tell
was kind
us
of
the story of Velvet Buzzsaw again.
Essentially, it's an art dealer. They discover some art from someone who's died, and it blows up massively. It turns out the reason the art was hidden away was because bad things happen when you're near the art.
It's got like a supernatural force to it. We talked about earlier with Jake Gyllenhaal being casted well in Far From Home. Jake Gyllenhaal, I think, it does a really good job in this film.
Oh, God.
Being kind of this like super bougie art dealer critic, you know, like he fills that role really well.
Nice. I have not seen this one, so I have nothing to say. Have you seen this one, Chip?
I have not seen this one. This is on my list now. I know, because I, you know, of course, I have Netflix.
There you go. My fourth round pick is Us by Jordan Peele. This is such a wonderful psychological thriller. There's a bit of horror in this one compared to his first film, Get Out. I liked Get Out better than Us, mm-hmm. but this mm-hmm. certainly has such an amazing psychological thriller feel to it, and makes you wonder about yourself and others around you and our origins.
Well, it's very Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And it is designed for a second viewing.
Oh.
Because the first time, you're certainly not catching everything.
Right.
And then the second time, you go, oh, of course. There's the clue they gave me that I didn't realize.
So you've seen this one twice?
No, I've seen it once.
But you speak to having...
Because, of course, I had to go and read about it to understand. Like, because they go, oh, all these clues are being dropped to you. Uh-huh. Like when she's snapping her fingers and they're offbeat. You're going, wait a minute.
That's odd.
Yes.
Ah. Yes. Ah. Kyle, you agree with me that Us is a good movie?
Yep. I have it in my top 10. Think.
Nice.
Jordan Peele as a student of the craft of horror and psychological thrillers. I mean, the way they use colors to kind of layer throughout the film is really genius. I agree with you, Steve. It's a much more complicated plot structure than Get Out. Get mm-hmm. Out's a little bit more straightforward. The theme is there. You just got to dig a little bit farther. And I think to Chip's point, I did the same thing after I saw it. I was going online to Google things. I'm like, what does this mean? What does this mean? Because it requires a little bit more assistance than Get Out does. But I think it shows Jordan Peele's here to stay. He's such a genius.
Mm-hmm.
Just do all the films. Take all the money, Jordan.
Stacey, you and I were texting while I was watching this movie.
Oh, yes.
And you had something that you wanted to ask, and you were curious about. What was that?
See, I love this film, but my mind works in a weird way where it'll pick up something, and it won't let it go until I've got an answer. So mine is, who the hell gave them the scissors? They're in an underground bunker. They're left there. Who is bringing them golden scissors? It's stressing me out still. I love the film, but that is just...
It's a movie. It's a movie.
I know, but I just can't. That's the way my brain works.
The set designer. That is set designer. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
What I am going to point out is... And some of it, watching this film, real in this film stars an entire, it's almost got an all African-American cast. Mm-hmm. I think this solidifies that there's an American culture.
Yeah.
And that culture, we have a way of dealing with things that maybe other areas of the world may not. And I think that Jordan Peele's work is showing that it doesn't matter, you know, if you're from the Northeast or from the South or something, we all are dealing with the story. And this is a very American story.
Mm-hmm. I would say Jordan Peele, to get the credibility he deserves, at least from the Academy, he needs to start releasing films that aren't right after the Oscars. Right? He needs like into the summer, into the fall. Because that's what Get Out was released literally the month of the Oscars.
Yeah, you're right.
And it qualified for the next year, but... People forget about those things when you hit the fall season. Everyone's putting out their epics.
Yeah.
So, like, he's just got to have a little bit better timing, because otherwise it's easy to forget about films like Us and Get Out.
And have you been watching the Twilight Zone that he put out on CBS All Access?
I have not.
I
don't want to pay for CBS All Access.
You can watch the first episode on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And it's really
it good.
And Amazon.
It's really, it's all right. It is definitely the Twilight Zone. I enjoyed it to no end. Stacey, have you gotten access to the Twilight Zone at all?
I have. I've been watching it. I'm still catching up because I'm not quite finished with it. But I've really enjoyed it. It still has the same feel as the original.
That's what I love about it the most, is he's captured that love that I have for those original stories and telling these short stories. I love short story format movies, and that is a real good place to go. Chip, do you have a fourth round?
I am going to go fourth round. I'm going to stay in comedy because I got to see Swing Safari. And while it was released in Australia in 2018... it was released in the United States just a little over a month ago, and it's got Kylie Minogue in it, and it is a very light, I guess, funny movie about the 1970s and about how absolutely crazy that era was. And it doesn't matter if it took place in Australia or if it took place in the United States. It was all the same craziness that going on. So the style of the 70s was playing, the hokiness... How they treated kids, how the parents were certainly changing and very different from their parents were. So, this is a family. This is a story of four families who lived together, who all grew up and were all different, and all their lives intertwined. And of course, it ended with blowing up a whale. So, you know,
that's quality.
That's quality.
Kyle, have you seen this one yet?
I haven't. I haven't heard of it, and it's now on my list as well. So thank you, Chip.
Stacey, have you seen Swinging Safari?
I hadn't even heard of it, but blowing up a whale has immediately made it a winner.
You should definitely go to the trailer. The trailer for this really sells it really well. If that piece that Chip gave you was not enough to sell you, go click on the show notes and click on the trailer. It's really good.
And the whale actually was a real piece. Well, this one is a fictional one, takes place in Australia. Mm-hmm. In Oregon, a dead whale in the 1970s washed up on shore on the beach, and they didn't know what to do with it, because at first it was like, oh my goodness, there's a whale. And then the thing starts rotting, and they go, well, all the animals will eat it. Well, they can't eat a whale. And so they bring out dynamite to blow up a whale. And of course, everybody shows up. They're filming it. They blow up the whale, which doesn't really blow up the whale, but there's meat chunks that fly everywhere. It is just...
It goes everywhere. Yeah.
It's just nuts. And that is so 1970s.
Yeah, it's so 70s. All right, so let's wrap it up here. Let's look at this list that we've made of our favorite movies of 2019. Kyle, you chose The Farewell, Under the Silver Lake, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, and Avengers Endgame. Stacy's favorites include One Cut of the Dead, Greta, Toy Story 4, and Velvet Buzzsaw. My favorites are three superhero movies, Spider-Man, Far From Home, Captain Marvel, and Shazam, which are two different movies, by the way. Captain Marvel and Shazam are not the same character. And then I threw in Us as my favorite psychological thriller. Chip, your favorites are Booksmart, The Extraordinary Journey of the Fakir, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Swinging Safari. That is our list of movies that we suggest that if you haven't gotten to any of these, you find them before it's too late, because these are some great movies. Before we wrap up, Kyle, do you have any other movies? Any really quick, just tell me the title and let's not discuss it too much titles?
Yeah.
Like what?
Best documentary I've seen all year, Apollo 11. Phenomenal. The Mustang, I think, is another good independent film. Midsommar, you mentioned earlier, really good. Gloria Bell, which is a remake from 2013's Gloria, was really strong as well. Those are the big ones. There are some I haven't seen. High Life, Climax, that I think probably compete with that as well. So,
do you have a list of these published anywhere, Kyle?
I do. I just posted my latest blog post of top 10 films of the year so far, and it's at kyleahickman.blogspot.com.
Stacey, do you have any other mentionables?
Ooh, I'd probably say you need to see Charlie Says, which is about Charles Manson. Surprisingly creepy, Matt Smith. I didn't think he'd be able to do it, but he was creepy. He did it good. And I'd probably say Long Shot, because that was a really decent romantic comedy that I think switched things around, and it worked really well. That one I watched twice and laughed all the way through.
I suggest that people actually sit down and watch Pokemon Detective Pikachu, believe it or not. Because this is, I know you're laughing.
It stars Deadpool, Steve.
I know you're laughing, but yes, it's Ryan Reynolds, and it is Who Framed Roger Rabbit for the Next Generation. And if you loved Who Framed Roger Rabbit, if you have some nostalgia for Pokemon, and if you love Ryan Reynolds, this is a movie that you should see. I also suggest the live-action Aladdin and hashtag FCF3. So, Chip, do you have any?
All right. So, I got to see The Best of Enemies. And The Best of Enemies was took place in Durham, North Carolina.
Okay.
And ultimately, I was the result of that, because that was when they integrated the schools. The black and white children finally went to school together.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a couple years after that. That's when I went to first grade. So, that was, for me, that was very personal, because it described an area that I lived very close to. And also Rocket Man, which may not be the greatest film ever, but I will say that it was enjoyable. This was a guy going through therapy, Elton John. This is his produced movie about his fictional life. And it was very interesting.
It's better than Bohemian Rhapsody. That's for darn sure.
There you go. That's pretty good. All right, that was wonderful. Let's transition over to what we have seen this week that maybe isn't on our list.
Is there something really scary for Stacey, Steve?
There is a scary documentary on Netflix, Stacey. You should go see it along with everybody else. Kyle and Chip and I all watched The Great Hack, which is available this week on Netflix. This is the story of Cambridge Analytica and the huge scandal that brought, you know, a real big question mark to our digital lifestyle, our digital footprint, and our privacy.
So basically, this is the story of how using big data, Facebook being part of that, helped basically sway the election. They identified 70,000 people who could potentially sway the election for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Brexit, which is basically or the United Kingdom choosing to exit the European Union, they were able to identify groups of people and then target specific ads, true propaganda, and they were able to convince that group of people, the undecideds, to make that something that may determine the fate of England itself, or the United Kingdom, excuse me.
And Ted Cruz up until he won Iowa, and then they got hired by the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kyle, what do you think about this documentary?
It is definitely a horror film in the most meta of sense, I guess. What I enjoyed about it is that it highlighted for us the lengths that people will go to for power, prestige, and greed. That to what Chip said, the idea of they use big data to help campaigns identify persuadables. So people that are on the fence about political candidates or political challenges, legislation, whatever it happens to be. And then they found a way to target and flood those humans with all the propaganda possible. And so I think it gets into this larger discussion about privacy and data rights. And should we equate that to human rights in today's world when, you know, a Facebook friend from high school that you've never talked to takes a silly Facebook quiz and all of a sudden all of your personal information is given to a group like Cambridge Analytical that is used to target people who are let's say persuadable to bias. So very, very relevant for today's society and kind of where we're going politically.
So very quickly, you could come down on this. This is maybe a potentially anti-Trump film. I don't think that is the message of this film, although it's part of it because Trump got elected. I think the real, because let me go back from the beginning of the United States, candidates have looked at ways of trying to use information through newspapers or whatever mean to slander the other group, to persuade people to do it. I mean, you can go back to Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. I mean, we're saying really nasty things about each other. Mm-hmm. But this is really on a different level because this is using big data and for somebody making a quiz, as Kyle said, that accessed not just that person, that opened up all their friends on Facebook to having that same scrutiny. And they were able to target, once again, a small sample that ultimately determined an election. And that could be very dangerous. Mm-hmm. A very small group of people determining for the grand population what the future holds.
Being influenced by some outside group. Stacey, do you have anything to share on this?
Oh, well. Where do you start? I mean, really, none of this should have been happening. There should have been transparency the whole way through. And it's kind of terrifying to realize just how little transparency there has been. This is just, I think it's rocked a lot of people.
It's certainly changed the world. This use of big data has certainly influenced our country and your country with Brexit and with our election. And the larger scope of it is what's going to come next. Who's going to use this data next?
And as so many of us cancel subscriptions to newspapers, this really shows the power of a reporter, because this was a reporter from The Guardian who was trying to access this information and trying to make, you know, this known that your data, which, you know, we all may know this, but there's a general population that's unaware about that they are the product of all these free services that we
all
love
these
using.
Huge companies, Google, Facebook, Amazon. We are the product of those.
But if we don't have strong reporters, strong incentives to those news people to uncover this, who is going to do this for us?
Yeah.
And so I think that there is something to be said about maybe why you should subscribe to some kind of news source.
Mm-hmm. Kyle and Chip got a chance to see The Farewell. Stacey and I haven't. I think we've talked about it a bit already, as it may be one of the top movies of 2019, if not the best movie of 2019. Do you have anything else to add on it?
Well, lots of tears, Steve.
Lots
Bring some
tears.
Tissues.
And spinal issues? Are you concerned for Awkwafina?
I'm really interested to see where her career progresses from here and if she continues to take on similar roles, because she does a really good job.
Hopefully this is a springboard to have more films by an American, which Awkwafina is an American, who of Chinese descent or heritage, where we can try to get an understanding of how the Chinese culture is different than the American culture, how they view things differently, and that's a beautiful story. If this story was about how an Italian family deals with death, We certainly could all empathize with mm-hmm. that. If it was a French family, we could all go, oh yeah, because in the West, we deal with things a little bit differently than they do in the East.
There you go. I got a chance to see Madness in the Method. This is Jason Mewes' directorial debut. It was a direct-to-video sort of movie that came out on Friday, and I bought a copy.
Snoogans.
And yes, Snoogans is definitely highlighted as a part of who Jason Mewes is. This is an autobiographical semi-autobiographical story about an actor who is struggling to find himself a part in Hollywood other than that role that he was given 30 years ago, and he's just been pigeonholed into that character. And that idea of method acting and how that can help you, this turns very dark. He goes down the method acting role so far that he winds up murdering three people in this movie. Yeah, that happens. Yeah. Yeah, this is not a great movie. This is a passion project from Jason Mewes. And for those of us who have been following his career and Kevin Smith's career since Clerks, it's good to see our friends making a movie, but this is not a good movie by any stretch. But it might be worth a gander.
Well, like all Marvel Cinematic Universe films, it stars Stan Lee too, right, Steve?
Stan Lee is in this. This very well might be the last time we see Stan Lee's face on film. This might be his last cameo since he passed away. This was filmed a few years back, and it's been sitting on a shelf, and now you have access to
it.
It's
always the sign of a great film, Steve.
It's not a great film. This is not a great film, but it's fun to see our friends. It's fun to see these people that we admire making it, and that's what I found in the Madness in the Method.
Steve, if we wanted to ask Kyle about a film about family, how would we do that?
Kyle, have you seen a movie about family this week?
Oh, the family. Not in the mafia style, but definitely
not capital F.
Not that kind of family, but family in the Fast and the Furious universe, because we were brought Hobbs and Shaw, their own franchise. So I went and saw it on Friday. I like the Fast and Furious movies. I view them as they're fun, action packed. You have to suspend some disbelief, right? Because of the way mm-hmm. the films are made. But that theme of family, even though you don't have Vin Diesel. So we lost Paul Walker a while back. Rest in peace. You don't have that whole cadre of humans, Tyrese and those folks. You still get a lot of the family themes because the film is really about Hobbs, played by The Rock, going back to his roots in Samoa. Shaw, played by Jason Statham. He and his sister reconnecting, who's played by Vanessa Kirby. Love her. She's amazing. But the film itself, I mean, there's some parts that lost me. There's one part where they're literally like running down a building that's probably 80 to 100 stories tall, and The Rock is like jumping from person to person and falling on a guy from 20 stories, and then somehow they all survive, and there's a helicopter crash towards the end where they fall down a ravine and no one should survive, but everyone just walks away with a few cuts. So like stuff like that drives you nuts about the film, but the family theme, the idea we care about each other, it's pretty heartwarming from that standpoint. The movie definitely opens up itself for a sequel. And we already know that Fast 9 is currently in production. So we're not done with Fast and the Furious.
Chip and I have never seen any of these movies, but they are big money in the box office, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're right there for us to watch. I know they're going to be good. Yeah. It's kind of like the Tom Cruise films.
Yeah.
I don't see them when they open up, but eventually I see one and I go, wow, that was all right.
That was a good movie.
And here's the thing about the Fast movies. A lot of people will tell you they've gotten better with time, that some of the best ones are like Fast 7. Basically 5 to 7, people, most of the fans would say, are the best versions, which you don't normally see. There also aren't a lot of film franchises with 8 of them, if we're not talking about like
the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right. Yeah. Or cartoons about dinosaurs. You know what I mean? Like,
Steve, are there any films that maybe could foreshadow what will be available in the United States at some point in the future?
Stacy got a chance to see Animals based on the novel by Emma Jane Unsworth. Tell us all about this one, Stacy.
Yeah, so this has been billed as a drama comedy, but it's really more of a black comedy. It's set in Dublin, and it's these two women who are close to 30, and they're trying to figure out their lives. They've been partying, taking drugs, doing whatever they wanted. And it's, do we stop doing that? Do we change our lives, become adults, or do we keep going? And it's just looking at the battle between them, which was really interesting because they seem to be pulled in so many different directions. And I think everybody's felt that way themselves at some point, though this is two extremes. But yeah, it's a really funny film.
So it is truly funny. It's dark comedy, but it is truly funny. Laugh out loud funny?
Oh, yeah. There are moments that you'll be laughing out loud and going, oh, I shouldn't be laughing at that. You feel slightly guilty and then you're still too busy laughing, so you just keep going. It's very British humor. It's very dark.
And this opened up this last week over in the United Kingdom. Yeah. And it's not available here in the United States yet. That's the reason why I said it's kind of foreshadowing.
Yeah, we're
this good. This looks actually something I would want to see this.
Okay. So, Stacey, you suggest this one?
I'd say so, yeah. I went into it just because I wanted something to watch, and I really enjoyed it.
Very good. Let's see what's opening this week and see if there's any movies that we're going to enjoy this week. The first one's called The Kitchen. This is Melissa McCarthy, Tiffany Haddish, and Elizabeth Moss. They are the wives of New York gangsters in Hell's Kitchen in the 70s, and they take over and they have to help out with the family with a capital F.
Well, does this mean it's going to be a sweaty film, Steve? It takes place in the 70s.
It might be a sweaty film. I don't know. Or Daredevil's going to show up because it's Hell's Kitchen.
Of course. This looks very funny. Certainly a late comedy, a late summer comedy.
Okay. Kyle, do you think you're going to see The Kitchen?
I don't think I'll see it in theaters, but I will probably catch it on a different streaming device later.
Stacey, any interest in this one?
I will be seeing it, but as always, it's not showing here until much later. 20th of September.
Oh my goodness.
Nice. Yeah.
It's a theme. There is a football movie coming out called Brian Banks. Let me explain.
American football.
Stacey, football is a game that we play that if you kick the ball, you don't, it's not okay. I don't know why they call it football.
Football.
Makes total sense.
Right. Tell us about this one, Chip.
This is a story of a gentleman who is going to be recruited to play at the highest level of college football. He's falsely accused of a crime he did not commit. He ends up serving a time in prison, maybe 10 years, and he gets out, and the gentleman from Tot Soup is going to represent him, trying to...
Greg Kinnear. Yes, that's Greg Kinnear.
Oh, Greg Kinnear, that's his name. Anyway, this is a... basically a story about racial profiling and just something that was unfortunate to happen. This is based on a true story. Mm. So this is a sort of a sad case of a gentleman who was falsely accused, gets out, and you know, what do you do when your time to play professional sports on a high level is very, very short? Anyway, this is the story of that. Steve, are there any films about dogs and racing?
There is a dog racing movie called The Art of Racing in the Rain. This is Kevin Costner and his dog learning lessons about life.
It's not about greyhounds. You said dog racing.
Santa's little helper.
This is very... My senior in high school daughter wants to see this.
Yeah, it seems like one of those heart-wrenching dog movies.
It's based on a book. Yeah. And, of course, that guy from Bull Durham is going to play the voice.
Kyle, you're making noises. What do you think about this one?
If I had a genie, right, and I had three wishes,
#FCF3.
Two of them would be for more wishes, and one of them would be for never to have another dog movie that isn't Homeward Bound.
Enough dog movies in your life, huh?
Man.
People love their dogs. That's a thing.
They love the dogs.
The next one is called Dora and the Lost City of Gold. This is the live-action version of the children's program Dora the Explorer.
So I immediately asked my high schoolers if they had any interest in seeing this. They were the group that watched Dora when it came out.
Right.
And Dora, for those who are unfamiliar with the property, Blue's Clues and Dora were children's programs that were, I guess, the legacy of, say, Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. They were... perfect as far as the speed of these films of these shows were very slow. The pacing was gave
very
a lot of
deliberate.
Time for young. For, these are for preschoolers.
Yeah.
Why this is a teenager film?
Yeah.
I don't know because my children have no interest in seeing this.
It reminds me a lot of the new Jumanji. I loved the action of the new Jumanji. And I think a lot of people went into that not knowing that it was going to be a good movie. I have high expectations that this will be a good movie. The monkey needs to have boots. The monkey's name is Boots, and it doesn't have any boots. This bothers me.
Well, Steve, I hope things that actually have some bigger weight than that bother you. This this is definitely aimed at the, I don't know, the 12-year-old crowd, and there's got to be a movie out there for them. This looks pretty reasonable for
Stacey,
that.
Stacey, you have any interest in Dora, The Lost City of Gold?
Well, the trailer sounded interesting.
Yeah, the trailer is very reminiscent of Jumanji, that latest version of Jumanji. I look forward to the action of it.
I have to say that the review from The Hollywood Reporter has kind of put me off, but that's because he was creepy. I don't recommend reading it. I really don't.
Is that the one where he sexualized the movie?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Oh,
and then kind of ends it with, it's fine because she's not actually a teenager.
Yeah, it's real.
Oh boy.
That's the type of endorsement we all don't want to have.
And there you go. There's a children's story. There's another children's story coming out, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. This is based on the long-running, very popular book series. Stacey, did you read these books growing up?
I did, yeah. I've still got them in my bookcase, actually.
So, Stacey, did you read these books this week?
I am actually planning to start reading them again because it's premiering at Fright Fest this month. So I kind of wanted to, before I get to see it ahead of everybody else, I thought, read a couple of the books again.
Nice.
So this looks very interesting. Yeah. Very much like in the spirit of It, the movie that came out last year. I think that there is something that's going to be very nice about this for people who like this genre.
Yeah. Kyle, you excited about this one?
Guillermo del Toro's involved, which intrigues me. Again, probably not something I'll see in the theaters, but I'm intrigued enough I'll watch it at some point.
Very good. There is a documentary coming to streaming. This is from Amazon Studios. It's One Child Nation. It is a documentary looking at the one child policy in China and the effects that that has had already.
Well, incentives matter. If there's anything that I learned as an economics major, incentives matter. And the incentive was that you only had one child. And it looks like the story here is about a couple who had twins. They had two girls, and one ended up living in the United States. This looks interesting, and maybe a trip to learn a little bit more about this policy.
I think we all know somebody who was adopted from China as a result of this policy, and there's a lot of society that has been changed because of it.
And Kyle, tell us a little bit more about this. This
book. What I've read so far is that the critics are very high on this documentary, and the folks who have had the fortune to see it early love it. So I would not be surprised if this was a contender for documentary of the year at the Oscars.
Wow. I look forward to that one. Stacey, you going to catch One Child Nation?
Yeah, definitely. It sounds fascinating.
I look forward to it. You know, this has been a great 7 months. We've gotten through seven. No, the show hasn't been that long. Don't look at your watch, Chip. The 7 months of 2019 so far have been great. We've got some great movies. We've made a great list of our favorites of 2019. Kyle, tell us one more time, where can we find the rest of your list of your favorites of 2019?
You can catch it on my blog post. It is kyleahickman.blogspot.com, or you can follow me on Twitter where I post about most things movies at Kyle_A_Hickman.
And Stacey, our horror movie maven, you've been joining us every week for a couple of months now, and we've loved having your reviews of movies that we haven't seen because we're not nearly as involved in the horror genre as you are. Where can our listeners find more from you?
The best place would be Twitter if they find me at Films with Stacey. And it's a lot of film talk. It's a lot of nonsense. There's a lot of memes.
Wonderful. And we look forward to your reviews coming up for the next few weeks. Do you have any movies on your radar that are going to be coming up?
Oh, I think Mega Time Squad's going to have to come up soon because it's just come out on video on demand and it's awesome.
I've got a couple that are coming around the bend. Robert Eggers' The Lighthouse with Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson is supposed to be epic. About two men running a lighthouse in the 1890s. It's a black and white film. It's supposed to be very good. Yeah. Jojo Rabbit. I don't know if you guys have seen the trailer for that. It could be a controversial one because it's about a young boy whose imaginary friend is Hitler. It's a comedy.
Maybe a little bit controversial.
It's a comedy.
It's a comedy. But that one is.
Of course
that
it
one is.
Is
hit. 1917, the trailer dropped for that this week. World War One. That's supposed. It looks like it's going to be really, really good. And then we finally got the trailer for The Irishman, which is Scorsese's epic about Jimmy Hoffa that's going to hit Netflix, which is essentially it's their version of Roma, I think, going into Oscar season this year. So some good ones coming around the bend.
Fantastic. We look forward to your reviews, and Stacey, we look forward to your reviews, and we'll try to keep up with all of the films that you guys watch. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here, guys.
Really?
Book it. Brings us to our book it. Our book of the week, you got a chance to read Conscious Capitalism with a new preface by the authors Liberating the Heroic Spirit of Business. This is by John Mackey and Raj Sisodia.
John Mackey, for those who are not familiar with it, was the CEO of Whole Foods. He still runs Whole Foods underneath Amazon right now. But this is about how he got started and how he basically put together a philosophy on how he wanted to run his business and how other businesses could use his experience creating Whole Foods to create businesses that have a purpose beyond just, you know, making money.
Okay.
This is a fascinating book. I really wish I would have read it a whole bunch, a long, long time ago. Ultimately, if I could say, hey, if there was a way I would like my clients to feel in my business, this is exactly what it is. In fact, I liked it so much. Raj Sisodia is a professor at a university. I ended up ordering the book basically to sort of outline how you can better articulate that to your clients. Hmm. So this is a book that I use not only to learn a little bit about John Mackey and this wonderful business that he created, but also to sort of springboard how to better tighten up how I want to present myself to other people who would like to work with me professionally.
That's great.
This is an incredibly good book. It's powerful. It talks a little bit about, you know, the reason why you're in business. You know, money is important in the sense that we all have to survive, and you can't run a business without making profits. You've got to be able to create a business model. Your customer is your master. The stockholder who owns stock in your company is your master. Mm-hmm. And what you want to make sure is you're doing when you create your business model is always working for the benefit of those people. Now, you are also, as the owner or the person running this, you are also one of the masters. So you can't starve any one of these people. You've got to work to all their benefits. Mm-hmm. So he talks a little bit about how to work with employees, how they decide what types of benefits they would add, how they would be paid, how their areas of the store and how the areas of the business should be set up. Talk a little bit about the stockholders, about how you should communicate with them, what type of stockholders you want to have. You want people there for a long time that recognize you have ebbs and flow in your business, and if you're starting on a certain area and it's not really working the way you want to, that you have the flexibility to change that, and also starting that business. And his father was a college professor, had an accounting background, and how his father's feelings helped shape the company early on. But later on, they were very limited because his father had a different outlook on than he had, and how sometimes those people that sit on your board have to change. So, and finally, I want to say that your customer is also the last voter on this, not the last person there, but this is a voter. This is a person who has strong feelings on how you should run your business. They want to be proud of the companies that they're working with. Mm-hmm. And how you can transfer, you can learn from other businesses. Like Walmart, you may be competing with Walmart and you may believe in some of the things that they're doing or not, but he was very gracious in saying, who is going to lead recycling on the level? What was Walmart who did that, and Whole Foods can learn. You know, he's Whole Foods, but Trader Joe's, he has a lot of complimentary things that he says about this company. So there's a whole bunch of companies that you can also learn from. You can see how quickly that when things were not really working the way it needed to for Whole Foods as he built this company up, that how easily he was able to fit into Amazon's business model, because Bezos certainly transformed the industry. Hmm. I recommend this for any person who would like to tighten up their business model. I absolutely ate this up.
Scroll with it.
Steve, August 7th is the beginning of ESPN 8, the Ocho.
Oh, thank goodness.
All those sporting events that you never thought could be filmed.
They ran cameras over to the cornhole tournament and to whatever other sporting events they could find. They are broadcasting these on ESPN 8, the Ocho.
The Ocho. And this came from the movie Dodgeball, right. If you remember that.
Yeah.
There are 5 rules of Dodgeball, Steve. And then... it starts at 2 a.m. in the morning with the running of this film. It ends at the end of the day with another running of this film.
Dodgeball.
In between, you get the oddity of what was originally ESPN when it first started broadcasting. Uh-huh. They had no rights to anything. So between rodeo derbies and high lie and anything else you could think of.
Anything they could find.
Oh, my goodness.
Now it's a lot of poker. They play a lot of poker on ESPN now.
Well, it's there's drama involved. Yeah. There's strategy involved, and I think that anytime you're competing, mm-hmm. in a world where the rules are known and people can use those rules against each other, that's the beauty of sports.
And Gabe Kaplan. Gabe Kaplan shows up and plays poker.
Oh, does he really?
He really does. Welcome Back Kotter himself is in there playing poker.
Does he tell a joke at the end?
Of course he does.
Of course he does. And then, of course, you get a little Groucho Marx in there. The Ocho will absolutely tickle you because there is something odd going on. And I recommend this.
Good morning. This is Professor Pamela Bedore here to introduce Too Much Scrolling's next Read Together assignment. Join Steve, Chip, and me in reading 1 Second After by William Fortune. It's a story of struggle and survival after an EMP disrupts all electronics and plunges America into a new age of working together without the aid of technology. What would your day look like if you had no access to electricity? Read 1 Second After and find out. We will discuss it on August 13th, just as these students report back for school. Find your copy today and take the journey with us. You won't regret it. I'm Pamela Bedore, and I'll see you in the future.
Thank you again to Kyle Hickman, our movie expert, and Stacy Shaw, our horror movie maven, for coming in and making our list. You can go to our show notes and find our list of our 12 favorite movies of 2019 so far. That was a great conversation.
That was a great. Thank you again for joining us.
And Pam Bedore for introducing us to our Read Together book, 1 Second After. That discussion is going to happen next week, so get your copy.
And Steve and I have both finished this book, and my goodness, we're all ready for a conversation. I'm afraid of reading the next one because I don't want to confuse the two.
I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Absolutely. If you need more information about anything that you've heard today, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on Stitcher and TuneIn Radio, and you can ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future. I just want